A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 279. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Firstborn. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're with the BBC back in 1988. We're looking at 3 50-minute episodes that make up this series, Firstborn. A controversial BBC science fiction classic, the DVD cover describes it as we are yet again delving into the world of, I suppose, mad scientists almost, but genetic experimentation, and are they creating a man or a monster or some weird hybrid? We'll find out as we go along.
Yes, absolutely. And perceptions and ideas about current science and where it's going play into this as well, for sure. And this features Charles Dance, and it was recently reissued or reprinted on DVD. So getting into the setup of this, a genetic researcher is working with primates and attempting to produce a human-ape hybrid, and his attempts at doing so far have failed.
Yes, he's having a hard time of it, and I have to confess, Brian, I wasn't entirely sure why he was trying to produce hybrids. There's obviously some military interest, although I think there was something about also trying to reduce aggression in the human race. But who knows why scientists are doing these things in these programs sometimes.
That's right.
So he's using human sperm with a gorilla eggs. Somehow he manages to successfully implant an embryo into a female gorilla called Mary. And the result is an extremely hairy human-looking baby that the scientist is basically ordered to destroy by his overseers, I suppose, and the people who are backing his projects. And this leads to a rather dramatic episode, which I think concluded the first of the 3 episodes, where he takes the child in a sort of basket, very sort of Moses-like, and places it in the river. But then he relents and he plunges into the river to rescue the child before it comes to any harm.
Yes, we will get to the idea that there are a number of sort of religious references that are tucked into this. So we should talk about the characters. Edward Forrester, played by Charles Dance, is the scientist at the heart of the story. He is brilliant and has a strong moral compass, but he also is very passionate about this idea of creating a hybrid, and then has this quite intense attachment to this hybrid child. So his character and these sort of ideas about him are quite central to this show.
Yes, absolutely. We'll ponder and speculate as we go along as to what his true connection to this child is. But here, we have Charles Dance, probably best known to everybody now for playing Tywin Lannister in Game of Thrones. But at the time of this series, he was a sort of British television heartthrob leading man, having been very successful in a BBC adaptation of the Jewel in the Crown series, which came a few years before this. So he was, certainly his television reputation at the time was very high.
And he's done a lot of work in movies. He was in The Imitation Game. He was also even in the 2016 Ghostbusters film. Early in his career, he was actually a Bond villain in the James Bond series. He had a very minor role in For Your Eyes Only, but it's sort of nice to see him there looking back at things now.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that one. Which one did he play a henchman in? But it was too easy for you, Brian. you spotted it straight away. And he also played Fleming himself, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. There was this BBC film called GoldenEye, where Charles Dance played Ian Fleming in a sort of, I think, a docudrama-style production. I have not seen that one.
No, I can't remember it myself either, but there you go. So, the great Charles Dance is our lead scientist. We've mentioned that he sort of got various overseers and mentors. One in particular is a scientist called Lansing, who's played by the great Philip Maddock, here playing a sort of senior scientist, advisor, mentor to Forrester. I believe it's him who gives the order that the child is to be destroyed, if I recall correctly, Brian.
Yes, that's right.
And of course, you know, it's great to see Charles Dance, but it's, you know, it's really good to see Philip Maddock back on the screen again.
Yeah, seeing the two of them together is quite electric. It's quite nice to see that. Anne Forrester, played by Julie Peasgood, helps to raise this this child. She is Edward Forrester's wife and helps to raise this child alongside their own daughter. And it seems like she doesn't know about the child's origins. And although that's not entirely clear, but she fits into things as Forrester's wife and as the mother raising these children.
And of course, we've got, as well as the mother, we've got to have the child. So we have the gorilla human hybrid known as Gore. Now, he'll be played by several actors as he grows up throughout this series. So there's a couple of child actors, and then he's played as a sort of young man by Jamie Foster. And as we say, he develops throughout the series and we learn a bit more about him and which bits of sort of gorilla abilities he seems to have inherited.
Yes, that's right.
And he also has a sister, or rather a sort of foster sister, because he's been fostered by the Forresters. But their actual daughter, Nell, is played by the movie actress Gabrielle Anwar in a very early role from her. If the name's not familiar, she was the female lead in the Scent of a Woman movie with Al Pacino. And here she is playing sort of the true child of the Forresters and Gore's sort of adopted sister.
And the two of them are the same age, so they play with that as well. Moving a little further into the show, the baby version of Gore is sort of very hairy and looks like a cross between human and gorilla, as he is. But that extra hair soon disappears, and he takes on the appearance of an ordinary child, an ordinary young boy. And although he is intelligent, he doesn't develop normal speech. And they actually do this operation. There's this operation done almost in secret in Europe by a group of doctors who don't know Gore's origins, where they are able to give him a normal voice, I think by a transplant of some sort, but that wasn't entirely clear to me.
No, it is a bit odd. And the doctors who examine him do say various things like, you know, it's very strange to see this abnormality, which they've never seen before. It looks almost like he's got an ape's voice box, they say. You know, which of course, for his father and for us, we all, you know what's going on. But for the doctors, they just regard it as a sort of technical challenge, I guess, to give this boy a normal voice box and get him speaking.
Yes, that's, yeah, it's exactly right.
So he does develop the ability to speak. He also develops the ability to do several other things. And it's shown several times that he is stronger than a normal human. And in particular, he has increased speed and agility. So we see him frequently sort of romping through trees, but also later on in his sort of life when he joins the army, or at least he's in training with the army, you see him outperform all the other recruits on an army assault course, which he manages with sort of gymnastic and athletic ease. And of course, we have to have a cover story. So the cover story was that Gore was the son of a young family that Edward Forrester knew, who were both, the parents were both killed in a car crash. And that's the cover story. And that's why he's adopted this child. And I think, you know, that's the story his wife believes. There are a couple of people in the series who know the truth, and they prove to be problematical later on. But yeah, that's what he tells everybody. And that's how he gets to have Gore brought up in a normal human family. But as we say, these various sort of guerrilla trays sort of come out from time to time.
That's right. But they do go to great extents to make the point that he is pretty much an ordinary human with just these few little things that make him different. And in fact, the truth of his origins is kept secret from almost everyone, including from Gore himself.
Yes, that's right. He won't know exactly what's going on, well, for quite some time, shall we say.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I think the ethical questions about how they keep that secret from him and from certain other people, they don't really address. They do address some questions, but those questions they don't really address.
Yes, and I mean, I suppose we should mention that although we do see him romping on assault courses and climbing through trees, it's not really an action-adventure show that we're talking about here, Brian.
No, it really isn't. It's much more about the ethics of doing this and the consequences of it and what it means for Gore himself and for everyone else. So it's much more about the character interactions and the sort of ethical ideas of doing this.
Okay, so that's what's happening in the sort of first couple of episodes. We'll turn to our production notes. And I have to confess, I was struggling slightly until I remembered that inside the DVD case, there is a rather extensive viewing notes booklet by the TV historian Andrew Pixley, a name that's come up a few times on British Invaders for these rather comprehensive notes that he writes.
The always reliable Mr. Pixley jumps in to save us again, right?
He does, yes, because there isn't an awful lot of information about this show on the internet, but here we are. So, Firstborn was based on a 1981 novel called Gore Saga by the writer Maureen Duffy, known for her works on both human and animal rights. And she picked up this idea from reading a news story. I don't know if this was a true news story, but an idea that Chinese scientists were reported to be attempting a human-gorilla hybrid. So she wrote this novel, Gore Saga, and it was picked up by a BBC producer called Sally Head, who handed it to a team she'd worked with before, because they created another memorable and controversial TV show, The Lives and Loves of a She-Devil, based on the book by Faye Weldon. So it was a successful team who were then handed this novel, Gore Saga.
That's right, and it was adapted for television by Ted Whitehead, who later wrote the TV series The Cloning of Joanna May. And he had worked on She-Devil as well and would go on to write for Cracker. Firstborn was directed by Philip Saville, who also directed She-Devil and Joanna May with Ted Whitehead, but is probably best known as the director of Boys from the Black Stuff, the series by Alan Bleasdale.
Yes, so those are some huge British television shows from the past. And Philip Saville, interesting director, you know, he comes across our radar for having directed the Machine Stops episode of an early 60s show called Out of the Unknown, which we have covered. It's one of the surviving episodes. He also directed the 1977 BBC adaptation of Dracula, which we haven't covered, but who knows, we may get to. And way back, he did a 1956 TV version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which as far as we can tell is lost in the archive. That one doesn't survive, which is a shame because we were looking for a British TV version of that story, Brian.
Yes, interesting work he's worked on for sure. And also interesting to see that we have a team of a number of people who've worked on several different shows together. And by this time, I think, had built up good working relationships and were working as a team quite well.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Interesting. And as I say, the shows they worked on, such, you know, important shows. But there you go. We've got the production of Firstborn mainly taking place in Wiltshire, Marlborough, and obviously at the Longleat Safari Park, which is where I presume all the real animal sequences were filmed. It's shot on 16mm, so it gives it that sort of quite movie-like look for a television show. So, yeah, it doesn't look bad. And as I say, some interesting outdoor locations and use of the real animals at Longleat.
Yes, they did a nicely put together production by using these locations and being able to use the animals. Mary, the mother of Gore, was involved in the story in such a way that they couldn't use a real animal, and the gorilla suit was created by the Hollywood effects wizard, none other than Rick Baker. And inside the suit, they had the movement artist Peter Elliott. So they were able to put together something quite nice there. And David Allen Barclay and Christopher Leith operated this animatronic face in order to give some different facial expressions, which all put together gave quite a nice character for this gorilla.
Do you know, it is one of the better screen gorillas that I've seen, Brian, so much so that I couldn't at first tell if it was a real animal or a man in a suit. So I think they did a splendid job on Mary the gorilla.
It was very nicely done, for sure.
And as you say, the Hollywood legend Rick Baker, so there you go. We've got real animals, obviously, in the series. So the other animals we see in Forrester's research lab were supplied by the Jimmy Chipperfield Organisation, famous for running animal circuses here in the UK. So they provided the sort of background animals. We've mentioned one Hollywood legend. It's astonishing, or it was to me, to find that the music for Firstborn was composed by none other than Hans Zimmer, who I presume at the time was just, you know, doing TV and film compositions. And of course now he's pretty famous for his film scores, Brian.
Yes, he's done some fantastic stuff, and having him here on this type of show is great.
Yes, amazing. And interestingly, the booklet tells me that he would reuse his Firstborn theme as a track played over the closing credits of the film Angels and Demons. So if you managed to make it all the way through that film and through the credits, you may have heard the Firstborn theme sort of reworked, I guess, for that. I'm not sure anybody did make it to the end of that film, but there you go.
Well, interesting to see that he was, you know, still using things from this, you know, relatively small production in comparison on major film work.
Yeah. And what, you know, how remarkable to have a BBC show that's got Rick Baker and Hans Zimmer working on it in the 80s.
Yes. Firstborn was indeed a big series for the BBC. An image of Charles Dance holding this strange hairy baby was on the front cover of the Radio Times in October 1988. Firstborn was broadcast on BBC One in three parts, starting on October 30th of 1988.
And we have to say, again, I'm indebted to Mr. Pixley's notes. They have to say that both the Radio Times cover and the series generated complaints, both to the Radio Times and to the BBC, with one correspondent calling the cover, which seems rather tame to our eyes, but calling the cover sickening and sensational. And I will, when this episode comes out, I will post the Radio Times cover on our Facebook group just so you can see what all the fuss was about. It's basically the same as the DVD cover, which we'll be mentioning in a moment. But it does, I guess, you know, the 20, whatever we are now, 29 years later, it looks fairly sort of innocuous now, Brian.
It does, but it's interesting because the idea of this sort of human but not human image. And the idea of that as a baby is something that people found disturbing, which is interesting.
Yes, it is. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in our next episode. And I'll speculate some of the reasons why. But yeah, fascinating little production detail. The sort of stuff that regular listeners will know that I love.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the availability of this one.
Yes, if we've piqued your interest, here in Region 2, we have a BBC To Entertain DVD from 2006. It was out of print, but now seems to be available again, possibly due to the success of Game of Thrones, who knows. It does seem to have the three episodes edited sort of into one long movie version on mine, Brian. It does, as I say, also have that nice and very extensive production notes booklet by Andrew Pixley. As ever with these things, you probably want to watch the show before you read the notes because there are some potential spoilers. Currently going on Amazon, another stockist here in the UK, for $18.99 for this DVD. I'll mention another DVD for a show we talked about, I think, last year, which was Chimera. Currently, that's about £18 as well. And I'll be talking about the two shows side by side in our next episode. So that's Region 2, currently available. Region 1, Brian?
In Region 1, there is no release. There are some imports kicking around on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, but they are very expensive. So you really are, if you want to see this, you should import directly from Amazon.co.uk and be aware that you should have a Region 2 capable DVD player to use to watch it.
Okay, it's always tricky with Region 1 for these British shows, but there you go.
Often it happens that way, yes. The novel, Gore Saga, is out of print, but there are secondhand copies out there. And certainly you should be able to track that down if you want to read it.
Yes, and as ever, we're putting out the call for somebody who has read it to perhaps compare and contrast with the TV version. I guess we sometimes give the impression we're not great readers on this show, Brian, but we just don't have the time often to go back and find and read the original source material. But as you say, it is out there.
Yeah, it is nice to do that sometimes, but yeah, I haven't been able to get a hold of this one to read it. So next time, we will talk a little bit more about Gore's adult life and discuss some of the issues in adapting novels to screen and make some comparisons with, as we mentioned, this other show from a little bit later, Chimera.
Yes, plus we'll get to our own reviews and recommendations and tell you whether you should pick up this DVD. There are some things to talk about, plenty of stuff to go on when we come back, Brian.
Oh yes, absolutely. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. All of our past episodes, including the Chimera ones, are there. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group there. And we have plenty of discussions going on there.
Or come and find us at vognetwork.com, the Voice of Geeks Network, where you'll find all sorts of geek-related shows on internet streaming radio, and we're proud members there.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.